This is Hawkseye Guns Podcast. What is up, y'all? It's your boys with Hawkseye. You know, it's been kind of a crazy, weird summer for me, or spring, I should say.
I was gonna say, summer hasn't started quite
yet.
Yeah,
well, I was thinking rolling into summer, and apparently I'm always looking forward. You know, I'm a futurist. I always look forward. And what I'm looking forward to now is shooting all kinds of stuff.
Can we just go ahead and call it what it is? You have no perspective of time. I mean, I've heard you say a few days ago for things that happened years ago.
Yeah, or a little while ago. It was like, dude, that was 2012. I was there. It's like, oh, yeah, no, yeah, it was, yeah, a little while ago. Yeah, oh, yeah, no, I have old man time now. You know, it's not good. It's not good. I was at the gun shop the other day. I'll just come right out and say it. I was at the gun shop the other day. I would say gun shop. Actually, it was the Cabela's. I was at an office meeting. It was around like almost 5 o'clock. It was about 4:45 on a random ass Tuesday, and I didn't want to. Like, I had to drive an hour home or an hour and a half home with traffic, or I could wait a little while at Cabela's, and you know, it'd take me 35, 40 minutes, you know? So if I left now versus I left an hour from now, I would get home at the same time. You know how traffic works.
Yes.
So I'm like, what a pleasant way to do. I have a Cabela's 5 minutes from my office. I'll just go over there and hang out for a little while. So I did. And, you know, there was nobody there. I mean, it's not hunting season. There's no anything. And anybody doing anything is over in the fishing section because it's springtime in Texas and everybody's fishing, right? So there was like four guys working all the counters and the showroom and all the stuff and me. So I actually walked in because I wanted to see if they had the Weatherby Sorix, which we talked about a little while ago on the last cast, actually, back in March. And they did not. And I also wanted to see if they had the Stoeger M3000 Select, which is the stainless steel engraved version of the Stoeger M3000.
And that's the one that basically had made you eat crow over Stoeger.
Yes, it is.
Okay. just making sure I'm remembering.
Just checking, sir. Yeah, no, that's exactly the one. And they didn't have that one either. So I was like, okay, well, you know, that's cool. Let me go look over. I mean, they're not out yet. They're not out yet. It'd probably be fall before we kind of start to see those proliferate through the stores and everything. And that's fine. I don't mind that. So I want to look at the used guns.
Summer's not typically where you see a lot of new things released. It's usually where you have the good deals.
Right. Right. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. You know, the stuff they're trying to get rid of or whatever it is. And, you know, I go look at all the kind of stuff. You know, there's the standard like sale on Tika rifles and stuff. And I have shot a Tika twice and it was just a lovely gun. I didn't have any issues with it.
What was that video we saw with the lovely young woman going, I wasn't going there to buy a gun.
Yes. That was a Tika, wasn't it? I forgot about that. I was exactly. Just going there to look at the guns. I was just looking. And then she pans over. There's a Tika sitting in the back seat. I really didn't mean to. That's every time for me. Like, I was just going to look at the guns. I really was just going to fart around, as Beef would say, for you know, 45 minutes to an hour and wait for traffic to die down in a place that was pleasant. That's all I was doing.
Anybody who's never done that before is really listening to the wrong podcast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, like let's just go somewhere pleasant and wait out the traffic that I don't want to deal with, and it'll be fine.
Oh, I meant going in to look at the firearms and come home with one.
That's almost every time for me. Like I'm very glad I don't do that. Like I have the self-control and the discipline not to do it with like cars or something I could really get myself in trouble with. You know, like I came home with another Camaro. Here, well, look, here's a Challenger. You know, like, no. And I'm talking the old 70s muscle cars, not the ones now. Sitting around talking with the guys, chewing the fat. They had a wonderful looking Barrett 50 cal bolt action. It was all done up and pretty. It had been Cerakoted and it was all camoed out and had the big bipod on it.
And they still have 50 BMG on sale.
I don't know if that's true anymore. At least not in my Cabela's. I don't know if that's true. They may have gotten rid of a lot of it.
No, it's that thing over COVID that it was kind of like, do you have 9mm? No. Do you have 357? No, but I have 50 BMG.
Not 223, not 556, not 7.62, not 9mm, not 380, not, yeah, 50 BMG and like some other weird rifle caliber that like nobody had, you know?
Okay, I'm going to interrupt this one because it just popped in my head. It was something I was going to send you, but I saw a video the other day of somebody who had taken a AR pistol and made it for 300 Win Mag.
Oh my God, I saw that. I almost sent it to you the other day.
And it's kind of like, dude, and it's one thing into it, just the AR platform in and of itself, which is fine, but you put it in a pistol? You're not going to have a shoulder left.
Look, I love a 300 Win Mag. I think it's a great round for hunting aliens, big giant Kodiak bear, moose, you know, something like that. I don't like the stuff in Texas isn't big enough to warrant a 300 Win Mag. Or, and I will say this, the distances that I shoot, 300 Win Mag is way overkill. You know, because
unless you're trying to get somebody at a few thousand yards, it is not an anti-personnel round.
No.
Now, once again, if you're trying to catch somebody at a few thousand yards, different story. But for something that you're going to fire out of a 10-inch barrel,
that seems excessive. I'm not saying it's not a great idea, because every time I say I don't know what this is for, I wind up buying or getting one because I fall in love with it later. And I got a story about that here in a minute.
Hey, I'm still the guy who looked at the clerk behind the counter one day and went, why would somebody bother carrying a big Arnold Schwarzenegger gun? Why am I drawing a blank here?
Desert Eagle?
Yes. I asking why somebody would actually carry one of those, and he lifts up his shirt and he's got one carried appendix style, and it's kind of like,
oops,
excuse me, I'm gonna go stand over there.
Never mind. Well, the thing is, it would be a wonderful thing. I'm sure somebody wants this. I can't imagine having or needing one. But I'm sure there's somebody out there who's really excited to have it. I'm just not that guy. But a 300 Win Mag and that form factor is not something I've ever like looked at and gone, man, if I just had this. I think, you know, for that stuff, it's just, can we do it? Not what is this for? You know, like they're not trying to solve a problem. They're just like,
you spend so much time asking, can we, that we never asked if we should.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then later on there's running and screaming. Jurassic Park for the young ones of you. Yeah, I was looking at the 50, you know, the big 50 Barrett, and, you know, they have a lot of retay stuff in the store now. You know, they're making a strong thing. If you've never seen retay, they make, okay.
Spell it for me.
Retay? R-E-T-A-Y. It sounds exactly like it sounds. They are Turkish guns. as you might expect, or Turkish-made guns. I know they make a lot of shotguns. I don't actually know if they make anything else. They make quite a few firearms. Some of them I have seen. Some of them I have not actually gotten my hands on. The ones that I have played with are very, very much on the line of a Benelli or a Franke or something like that, inertia-operated shotgun.
Okay, I have seen these before, but what I've seen is like the secondary names from. I'd never seen the actual manufacturer importer as Rite before, but I'd definitely seen the GPS ones before.
Yeah. I mean, there's they go through a lot of stuff, and they have some tactical. I think they only do shotguns at this point, or at least that's all I've ever seen.
It actually looks like they're importing one of those Turkish versions of the Beretta M9.
Yeah, are they really? Oh, that's interesting. The thing about them is they're very good looking. They're mid-priced, and they...
Okay, I've got to interrupt you.
Yeah.
They're also the ones who have apparently picked up the design for the Grip Zone.
Oh, no. where are
I'm
you
looking
finding
at
that?
Someone that looks exactly like a...
God.
An old Springfield Grip Zone, but it's actually a hammer fired one, and it doesn't look like the one that they sold. But I'm looking at this going, my God, that's the same grip. They put a different slide on it, but it's the same grip.
It's so terrible. Oh, they are. They do some of that stuff. Rite model mod 92. That's the Beretta. So that's the Beretta knockoff. Looks like the Rite X1. Oh, God, it says X-Touch on the freaking hand. Oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah, that's the old Czechoslovakian designs from Springfield.
Yep. So, yeah, it's and I guess it might be Turkey. I'm pretty sure it's Turkey, but I guess it might be Czech. I don't know.
If I had to guess, Rite is probably the importer.
Yeah,
and these things are just coming from all over the place.
You might be right. I mean, I know that there's a shotgun I shot. It's very, very recently from Rite. It was the Anatolia SS, and it was beautifully done in stainless. Had like 50% figuring and engraving all over the hold on, I bet you I can find it.
I'm looking at it.
It's very beautiful. I mean, it's black on top, silver on bottom, silver towards the back, gold trigger.
Yep, I'm looking at it.
Engraved. It's really pretty. I got shot one. It was a nicely handling gun. The only niggle I had about it is the takedown. It was kind of difficult to clean. And for some reason, I didn't track particularly well with the firearm, but that was just me. It had a little bit of cheek recoil, and I really didn't care for it. But wonderful to look at. Anyway, they have a whole bunch of stuff in Cabela's. They're kind of lower to mid tier shotguns. So I was playing with those a little bit. And if you guys don't do this, and Jake and I do all the time. In fact, Jake got a job doing this. Talk to your local guys, you know, sit down and say, don't be a dick. All right. That's not what I'm saying. Don't come in there and act like you know everything. Cause I guarantee you, you don't. Nobody knows everything about all the firearms. You can't, there's too much freaking knowledge. It's like saying, I know everything about cars. That's a lie.
Okay. Once again, still just, they've actually got a one, even though they're calling it a mock-up of an HK, it's actually a, cheap knockoff of a 229.
I do like me a 229.
Rite Baron HK.
I do like a 229. Mm-mm-mm. See, they make a bunch of cool stuff. It's sort of like the stuff you see with some of the Gersons and stuff like that, where you're just like, I know what that is. I know what that is. That's not what you're calling it, but that's what it is.
Basically Rite is importing knockoffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. Here's a Rite Eagle.
See?
Or their version of the Desert Eagle. Yeah, no, somewhere along the line, these are some of the people who in Eastern Europe and Turkey who have just kind of gone, let's just make guns that look like other people's guns.
Yeah, it's way easy. We already know the tolerances. We know we have the parts. We can manufacture them, and the patents have come off. So guess what? We can make those, and you can't. Like, it's like when the patent came off of the Glock Gen 3. You know, the Gen 3 Glocks. You started to see them everywhere, right? Because the patent was out. And everybody, like, I've got a Gen 3 Glock clone sitting in the closet right now. Taurus makes it. It's called the GC3 or G3C. It's wonderful. It's all the things I wanted to fix about a Gen 3 Glock, only it's better and it has a way better trigger. Don't knock the knockoffs, if you forgive the expression, until you've tried some of them. Some of them are really kind of nice. Some of them are crap, not going to lie. But you can't just like blanket, oh, they're all crap. No, not anymore. Not anymore. But so I'm talking with the guys, and it's always super fun, you know, just find out what people are into or what's going on and all that stuff. And you know, they asked what I'm into, and I'm like, well, you know, I don't do a lot of hardcore stuff. It's mostly, you know, shotguns and target shooting and everything like that. And the guy goes, oh. You're a clay shooter? You're a wing shooter? I said, well, you know, I have to do some wing shooting every once in a while because of work. You know, that's the, instead of going to golf down here in Texas, you may have to go wing shooting during the hunting season. Don't particularly care for it, but, you know, it's what you got to do. And he goes, oh, it's a big shotgun guy. I'm like, oh, I have a few. And he goes, you want another one? I'm like, I'm listening, because I had described, and for those of you who don't know, and I can't imagine who that'd be, both of you who listen to the show at this point, who that'd be, I like odd stuff, like not the norm.
No.
And I know, it comes as a surprise. And he goes, well, I've got kind of an odd duck. And I'm like, and in my head, I'm like, I want it already. I don't even know what it, I have not seen it. And my brain's already going, I want it, right? And so he goes in the back. He goes, this came in the other day. We really haven't processed much about it. It doesn't really even have a tag on it yet. And now I really want it. And he brings out what looks to all the world to be a Winchester 1200. But it's not. I look at it and... and it's got two square a fore end, and it's got a lot of figuring that in the wood that engraving in the wood that 1200 stone have. It's got a big dial a choke on the barrel. The bolt has been jeweled. It's like a really fancy 1200, but it's not a 1200. You flip it over and it says Ted Williams Model 200. Now
is that a name I should know?
Okay, so. Back, we're going to set the Wayback Machine for the 1960s at this point. Sears, when Sears was still Sears and in fact still a thing.
Wait a minute, is Sears even still there?
No. No, there are okay, no more
I
Sears.
I thought they were gone.
Yeah,
I
know no, there are no more anymore. Sears.
I didn't know if you had some Texas.
Yeah, no, there's no more Sears. So back in the 60s, when Sears was in fact a thing and was a prominent value-based department store, which is effectively what they were, kids, you'll have to look up what that is, because you probably, if you were born, oh God, in the late 90s or early 2000s, you may not even remember what Sears is.
You could buy middling quality of anything.
Anything, yeah.
There.
Anything. Mid-range anything. It struck the middle class right behind the eyes. So like at the lower end, you had Kmart. In the middle end, you had Sears. Sears was a good, solid, sturdy brand. You bought your GE. You bought your stuff. You bought your Whirlpool. You bought your RCA, your Zenith.
And you bought your kids' jeans that were so stiff that even though they weren't going to rip their knees out of them, they couldn't walk in them either.
Oh, God. I hated those things. I hated it. They were so stiff. You'd think they bathed them in starch, but no, that's just how stiff the denim was. God, when they came out with Acid Wash in the 90s and they were soft and light and stuff like that, I'm like, oh, please, please. Or late 80s, you know, I guess. Please, just get those, Mom, please. They're so much better. Oh, but they're $3 more. You know, no, please, Mom. Please. Anyway, you could get your mid-grade stuff there. And one of the things that Sears had was a firearms and sporting goods department. And what they did in the 1960s is hire the baseball player Ted Williams. Now, for those of you too young and don't have any idea who that is, Ted Williams is a freaking baseball legend. You can look him up. And it was a serious endorsement where he would endorse all their high-end sporting equipment. Well, firearms was one of those. And they took the hottest shotgun they had, the most upgunned shotgun, if you'll forgive the expression, they had, the one with the jeweled bolt, the one with all the engraving, the one with the dilets or polychoke, selectochoke, whatever you want to call it. All the bells and whistles, and they called it the Ted Williams edition. Now, what it actually was a Winchester 1200 that had been dudded up in clad in these things. The mechanism, the bolt, the action, all the stuff was all the same. And it was all made here in the U.S., right? It was completely U.S.-made gun. Now, remember, this is the 1960s, so when Winchester was making guns, they were making it all here. And it was, and it says proudly stamped on right on the barrel, made in USA, right? So it was a Winchester 1200, but Winchester, and here's the funny part, guys, Winchester couldn't be seen to be being sold in Sears because Winchester was a upper end brand, and I'm using finger quotes, as you can't see, that wouldn't be sold in Sears.
But there was a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah, there was a ton of it. There's a ton of it. You know, like H&R used to sell their Topper brand, you know, the single shot hunting shotguns in Sears as well under a different name. I bought a Kmart gun once.
But even then, above and beyond Sears, you know, above and beyond, you know, firearms, Sears did that with everything.
Oh, everything. Yeah. Oh, no. Absolutely. Everything.
There were tools that were made, you know, by the high-end tool companies that once again ended up putting like Craftsman on them instead and selling them in Sears because you couldn't, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same thing.
You know, and Craftsman was a special case because Sears figured something out a long time ago that men, this is in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, 80s, that kind of stuff. It was primarily men at the time. Don't come at me. Men use tools and sometimes they break. But they figured out the margins of especially like Craftsman brand tools and said, they break a lot less than you think they do. We're going to guarantee them forever and have a no questions warranty. So for decades, you could bring a broken Craftsman tool into Sears and there was no paperwork exchange. There was no receipt. There was no anything. You show them the broken tool. You go over to the rack. You pick out the new tool that was the same and you left. That was it.
I get the same thing with knives. The day-to-day knife that I carry is from Essie. And, you know, somebody looked at me once and told me that a nice buck knife would have looked nicer. And my response to it was, yeah, you're right, it might have looked nicer, but there's a difference. You look at the warranty on a buck knife, and the first thing that you see on the list is all the things that you shouldn't do with a buck knife. You look at the warranty on Essie, and it says, if you actually manage to break the knife, send it back to us. We'll replace it. No questions asked.
Right. And that's worth paying for, right? That's worth money. And it was worth money to a lot of Americans, right? A lot of Americans, in fact, Sears survived for probably a decade past what they normally should have in the industry or the age of the internet. Because of Craftsman tools, because it was just like the people didn't understand how to function without that model in their lives. So it kept. Now, when Sears finally packaged up and sold Craftsman, it folded like 2 years later. Anyway, one of the things that they did, and Jake's absolutely correct, is they did this with everything. They took name brand stuff. And released their version of it. Well, Winchester was too kind of quote unquote high end to be sold in their stores, generally speaking. They wanted the higher end places, the super cool gun stores and those kind of things that didn't want to be side by side on the rack with Sears brand. This is back, and again, this is for those of you who don't remember this, store brand back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s had kind of a taint to it. It was never as good. Now, nowadays, you don't care, right? Because everyone knows now they're all made in the same damn factory in the same place.
And inflation's a bitch.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So you don't care now. You did care then. But what they would do is they would entice you with these added extras. And this, the Ted Williams Model 200, all that to say, the Ted Williams Model 200 was pretty much the top of the line pump action shotgun that Sears sold in the 60s and 70s, early 70s. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, I know what this is because I remember seeing it on shelves when I was a kid. And I'm like, I know this gun. Like, I've seen this before, you know? And it's, for all the world, it's a Winchester 1200. But a couple of things, okay? Now, all that to say, Sears made this gun, or Winchester made this gun for Sears in conjunction with Sears.
And apparently there was more, because I'm also looking at the Ted Williams Model 13030 Winchester.
Absolutely. There was an entire line of Winchester firearms.
Yeah, I mean, and it looks like exactly what you would get from Rossi today.
Exactly. Exactly. There was an entire realm of Ted Williams / Winchester conversions that Sears offered.
And it even looks like there's still a market in parts for it.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Well, the funny part is most of it, I mean, it's a Winchester 1200. The parts cross. So, I called while we were sitting in the store because, again, nobody had anything else to do. These guys were working clothes, and I didn't want to leave because, you know, we had traffic. So I called Browning Winchester to see if I and gave them the model number to see if I could get the year off the thing. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm doing a serial lookup, you know, trying to find the year. They're like, oh, what do you have? And I'm like, oh, it's a Ted Williams Model 200. And they're like, oh, okay, that's this table, and just read me the number. Okay, that's 1973. I'm like, wow. I'm holding a 51-year-old firearm.
And you sent me pictures. It looks clean and pretty.
It does.
Or is that after you got a hold of it?
No, I didn't do anything to it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I have cleaned it. It was one of the top five dirtiest guns I've ever cleaned. Not the dirtiest, but it was in the top five. I'll go into that in a minute. But no, I mean, it looked fine. On the outside, it was fine. And I'm like, well, somebody took reasonable care of this. You know, the dial-a-choke, normally with a poly-choke, and how a poly-choke works is, if you've ever seen one, it looks like a compensator almost at the front end of the gun. It's not. Basically, there's a turnable dial or a selector, sort of like you're turning the ring on a scope. And you can turn the choke, and it'll constrict and unconstrict based on what choke you want it to shoot. And there's little fingers that in the end of the barrel that contract and expand to make the choke to make the pattern adjust to whatever you've set it for. It's really cool. That way you can kind of take all your chokes with you at one time. The only problem is in the 80s and 90s when states started switching to steel shot being the only permissible hunting round, people just blew steel shot through them, just shot them up. They can't really take steel shot very well. They tend to break. But if you're only shooting lead shot through them, they're fine.
Yeah, but you don't really want to eat deer that's been shot with lead.
Well,
I hear that's bad.
Normally you're doing stuff there's a cylinder mark for it. So if you were shooting a slug, then, you know, it wouldn't matter. But deer is one of the things that you can shoot a steel slug for. It's birds, really, that you're shooting steel shot for. So that's your pheasant, your geese, your, you know, duck, you know, that kind of stuff. Upland game, that kind of deal. That's all in a lot of states. That's steel shot only. I guess they started doing that in the 70s or 80s, I think, maybe the 90s in some states. It depends on the state. Anyway, a lot of times you see a selectable choke or a poly choke, and it's just shut up, or they'll just cut it off because it's been really rode hard and put away wet. But this one was perfectly fine. You know, you stick your finger in it, and you can feel it constrict and expand when you select the different choke selections, and you're like, wow, this thing is in really good shape.
That sounds so wrong.
I know it does. That's how you check it, you know. I know it sounds wrong, but it's what it does. And anyway, so I'm looking at this thing, and like I sent you pictures, and I'm like, there's nothing really wrong with this. You know, what's the deal?
Is it time to ask how much it put you back?
So I did. I asked the guy. I was like, okay, what do you want for it? He goes, well, and I thought he was going to start higher than a Winchester 1200. Like a Winchester 1200 full retail nowadays goes for about $350 to $400 if it's in really good shape. That's how much they go for. One, because they don't make the 1200 anymore. Two, because they become pretty collectible. And this one was a fine example of a top-end model Winchester 1200. I mean, had more engraving on it, had the jeweled bolt, had a poly-select choke that still worked. I mean, the guns cosmetically is in really great shape. There's a little bit of wear here and there, but that's it. I thought he was going to hit me with like a 4 or a 5. And I said, well, look, guys, I'm not really here to buy a gun. I started backing up, right? I'm not really here to buy a gun. You know, I don't really need that. I have an SXP at home, you know, and that's a wonderful gun. I've got an SX4. You know, I've got the automatic and the pump version, the grandchildren of this gun. I don't know. And he goes, well, it came in. We were going to put it at 199, but I'll give it to you for 165.
Well, damn.
And I went, here's my credit card. Before he could change his mind, right? Like, here's my card. Here's my license. I'll fill out the paperwork. And he goes, oh, okay, well, sold. So we do the paperwork and I fill out the stuff. And after I paid for it and we ran the check, I said, okay, I got to ask, why is this thing so cheap? And he looks at me and he's like, what do you mean? And I said, well, I know what a 1200 goes for. This is, a fantastic firearm. I've had my first gun. My first shotgun was a Winchester 1200 in 20 gauge, followed by a Remington 870 in 20. Jake and anyone who knows me will it's like Pavlov's dog. You can say Remington or Winchester, and I will start salivating. You know, like It's palpable. I own several of each brand, so I appreciate them a great deal. And he's like, yeah, the thing about this is it's not really collectible. And I'm like, why? It fixes all the stuff that I had, like the little niggles that I would have with a 1200, which is like, the bolt's kind of ugly and, you know, the stocks are kind of blah. And it has a winch. Normally, the Winchester 1200 had a wind choke, which, if you know anything about like cool, awesome chokes that you can go to like Carlson's and get, they'll go, oh, cool. What do you want? And it's like, man, I want the latest cool, badass choke. And they're like, cool, what's your choke in? And you're going to go, wind choke. And they go, ooh, we don't have it in that. right, like, ooh, yeah, not a rim choke. Like, even a rim choke, you can get like cool stuff for. But like, most of it's like Invicta or like mobile choke or something like that. They make everything in the world. Wind choke, not so much. But this gun, because it had a poly choke and because the stocks looked great, and you know, it was a Winchester 1200 underneath. I mean, it fixed all the niggles that I had about. The old 1200s. And I'm like, why isn't this collectible? He goes, it has Sears written on the barrel. He goes, we'll be lucky if this thing doesn't sit here for months. If you're into it, you can take it off our hands, and it's just one less thing we have to look after. I couldn't believe it. Like it's a nice looking gun. I mean, there's nothing really wrong with it. But it's an odd duck, and it doesn't have the right credentials, is really what it comes down to. And it's the only reason I own it today. Because it's just, if it had started with a 4 or a 5, I probably wouldn't have done it.
Well, darn.
Yeah. $165 plus tax. It was under $200. And I'm like,
man, I think I would have even done that.
I know. I was like, well, crap, man. Even if I don't want the thing, I got to take it now. You know, I mean, a fairly good looking gun and under $200. It's got wood stocks and a polychoke on it. Even if you don't want it, it's be fun to play with. When I got it home, I took the trigger group out, and two things happened. One, I couldn't get the bolt out because there's a trick to it. And
like, you got to turn the screw in a certain way.
Yeah, well, you got to take a screw out, and that screw does not exist on a normal Winchester 1200. And I was like, oh, crap, I got to YouTube this before I break something because this is not working. And the other thing is, the guy who owned it before me obviously did not know that either. So the bolt had never come out of that gun. So it was so filthy on the inside. I mean, the outside was perfectly, I mean, you could tell he looked after the gun on the outside. I mean, it was all well oiled. And
but at some point he went, well, I guess that part's not getting cleaned.
Exactly. There's a little screw in the bottom of the bolt that you have to take out because it pushes a side lock out and locks the bolt into the gun so that it doesn't come out the front when you take the barrel off. Well, that also locks the slide in the fore end on the magazine, and you can't get the bolt out. So what he just did from 1973 to a week ago was left it in. That bolt had never come out of that gun, out of that receiver.
Would it still cycle, though?
It did after I got done with it. It's much smoother now.
No, but even though it was probably rather crunchy, would it at least cycle before you did it?
I don't know. I didn't put a round through it before. I never fire a gun before I clean it.
Oh no, but even is it a semi or a pump?
No, it's a pump.
Okay, so you didn't just try to see if it at least, you know, eject?
Oh no, I did a snap cap through it, and the snap cap got stuck.
Okay, well that answers my question.
I went, I didn't know if it would like go from the magazine up to the chamber and then cycle back out. I didn't even get that far. I put a snap cap in the pipe, closed it, pushed the, you know, popped the trigger on the snap cap, and then tried to eject it, and it got stuck. That's how grody it was. And I'm like, oh, sweetheart, you need to be clean. That's why you're here. That's why you were at Cabela's. Because the guy looked at it and went, well, I guess that's as dirty as it comes. I can't do anything. That was it. That was all it needed, was just a good clean. Now, it did take me like 25 minutes to clean the damn thing because it was so nasty. But I was in shock. I was in shock. I was like, well, I need this. And so I did indeed buy it. I brought it home. I couldn't help it. Here's a tip for you guys. We talked about this on another show just recently. I always carry a shotgun soft bag in the back of my truck. It's empty.
This is genius, by the way.
I always carry a soft shotgun bag, just a soft bag, folded up under my seat in my truck. So that way, if I come home with a gun I didn't have beforehand, it comes home in the bag that she sees go in and out of the house all the time. And she's like, what's that? Oh, no, it's just the gun I got back from Steve. Oh, that's the one. Oh man, Eric was looking at this and we were trying to figure out what was wrong with it. And, you know, I think we got it, but it, I don't know. And she never says anything. Nothing. So I brought it back in, started cleaning it. It's great. But yeah, I figure for $200, who wouldn't have that for $200? I think it wound up being like 180 something. For $180, who wouldn't buy that? It's a piece of history. It's 51 years old. I've run some rounds through it now. Works as good as the day it was new. I don't see the problem, you know? I know a lot of guys don't take chances on older firearms, but and here's the thing, and I will say this. You need to know what you're dealing with, because not every firearm is like that, right? Like, you need to understand, is this something that will be viable 50 years from now, you know, or 50 years from when it was new? And the answer sometimes is no. You know, like some of those, but a Winchester 1200, a Remington 870, a Mossberg 500, these are just tanks. And what isn't working, you can get parts for. So I didn't feel bad at all, or taking any kind of risk with this particular firearm. So yeah, that was pretty much my week. So with that said, take a chance and make a questionable decision on an old-ass firearm. I'm just kidding. Don't do that. Do your research. Know what you're getting. And really enjoy the purchases that you make. Because, honestly, I'm going to have more fun with that gun just farting around, because I know that I like it and because I know that it is inexpensive. And though it may be difficult, or it may be even impossible to replace, I will run the risk of shooting it and playing with it and dragging it out into the middle of a field where all kinds of things can happen to it. That's what it's for. And even though it is 51 years old, it is still in workable shape, and I love dealing with it. So I hope you guys do too. I hope you find some stuff that you're interested in that may be some forgotten treasure or something like that. And if it is, if you do find it, let us know. We'd love to hear about it. We love talking about them. Send us pictures. It's all cool. Anyway, thanks guys, and we'll talk to you next time.
On behalf of Jake Buona and I, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. If you're interested in more content like this or podcasts, check us out at hawkseyeguns.com. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.